This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
From the capital of Texas, you're listening to the Austin Anthem podcast. Today, we're going to talk to Director of Women's Engagement for Austin Anthem, Ms. Natalie Simsky. We're also going to talk about the new MLS CBA and MLS news. We're also going to talk about some Austin FC hires and then Austin Anthem news and updates. My name is Landon Cottom, and as always, I'm joined by Jeremiah Bentley.
Hey, everybody, I'm Jeremiah Bentley.
Jeremiah, where are we?
We're painting with a twist on Burnett Road and 183, and we're very close to the stadium, and people are probably going to hear a little background noise from what's going on, but it looks like a pretty cool event.
Yeah, there's I don't know how many, but there's a good little crowd here. We've got a good representation of grackles on shirts and trees on hats and shirts, so it's a good little crowd we've got.
I think one of the most important things that people are doing here is sort of figuring out their game day fashion. So, like, how many grackles, how many trees, how do you make sure that the black and white and green and purple kind of all go together?
Yeah.
It'll make for a really good fan experience. And we're also, I mean, we're not literally in the shadow of the stadium, but we're pretty close to the stadium, and there's been a lot of exciting updates about that recently. So I thought we could talk a little bit about what's going on out there.
Yeah, so I think the most exciting thing, the most Instagram-worthy thing is that part of the roof canopy has gone up, which is really cool to see that level of development happening at this point.
Yeah, so it's good. You get that roof outline. You can tell where the stands are going to be. I feel like, is some of the concrete for the bleachers or something, or for the stands going in? I feel like I saw a piece of that.
Yeah, I think it's on the east side. Some of that has been put in already.
So that's so cool. I mean, it's crazy to think now. We've been talking about this for a long time, and it's been 2 years out and a year and a half out. Now we're literally like, this is the last off season that we will not have a team. So it's really good to see the stadium moving forward. And then also all the excitement around getting to 2021.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
I said, Landon, on the last show, we talked about the CBA process and it had not been signed yet, but things were looking good and they seemed like to be moved toward a positive outcome. And so we have some news. We do have a new CBA. So there's a lot that goes into that. Can you talk through some of the highlights of it?
Yeah, so I'll hit all the highlights and we can go in and kind of dig into each of them. There's a lot to talk about here, so we'll try to go quickly, but we'll give you some resources at the end for all you listeners to kind of dig into it a bit more if you're interested in learning more about it. But essentially, the highlights of it were incremental increases in roster spending, so more money going to players. Also, minimum salaries were increased. Free agency was expanded, more charter flights were added, and then also there's a potential for revenue sharing on the next MLS media deal. So I guess we can start with increased roster spending. So the big notes on that are minimum salaries for first team players are going to incrementally increase every year. So this in 2019, minimum salary for a first team player was $70,250. In 2024, it's going to incrementally increase up to $109,200. So for reference, in 2010, the minimum salary is $40,000. And I think in the early 2000s, it was something like 15 or 12. It was something ridiculously low.
Yeah, it was crazy. And I think just overall, it seems to be a real win for the players. I know there were some people that wanted to, you know, blow up the whole system and create this European-style thing. But I think they really did a good job at a high level, being able to, for the players to get a lot of what they wanted, but the owners to still have this predictability and control. And I think one way that you really see that is in terms of the media sharing, which we will get to in a little bit, but the fact that the players get a piece of it, but it was a sort of over a guaranteed amount. So
right.
I think it was a big win in terms of the league and for everyone, for the players to get a lot and recognize the growth, but, you know, not also not blow the model up, because it's still sort of a tender league and organization, and they still needs to be managed and cared for. But I'm glad that they got to that and made a difference. Is there a couple of abbreviations that are very important?
Yes.
And I don't know how you. I guess it's GAM and TAM.
I barely
understand them. So can you?
So
you've studied it.
Honestly, don't feel bad, because I think there's like five people in the whole world that understand the MLS salary structure. It's Don Garber, two other people that work at MLS, and then Sam Stageskill and Paul Tenorio of The Athletic. So I'm going to We'll give you some links in the show notes to some articles and podcasts you can listen to by Paul and Sam if you want to listen to some of that. But honestly, it's extremely complicated. With this new CBA, it's gotten a little less complicated. So I'll try to explain a little bit about what this stuff actually means and how it's changing and simplifying a bit in this new CBA. So in the beginning, there was GAM, general allocation money. So there's what's called a salary budget in MLS. It's kind of like a salary cap in other American leagues, other American sports leagues. So general allocation money is used to buy players, salaries down below, fitting into that salary budget. Targeted allocation money, TAM, was used to buy down players' contracts who are making between around $505,000 a year and $1.5 million a year. And those are the 2019 numbers. TAM was a structure put in place essentially to bulk up the middle of rosters. So before, you had super duper top heavy rosters where you had David Beckham making $6 million a year, and then the next guy on the roster is making below $100,000 a year. That's how drastic the changes were. Now with TAM came into place in 2015, I believe, and 2015, 2016, TAM essentially allowed teams to get higher level, more expensive players in those middle roster slots. And I think it did a good job of doing that. It's still top heavy, but it's top heavy in the first 4 to 7 or 4 to 8 slots, as opposed to like two people making a bunch of money and everyone else on the team struggling to pay rent. So in the new CBA, TAM is going to be rolled into GAM. In short, it's essentially just going to make roster spending and roster budgeting a lot simpler and a lot more flexible for general managers. So instead of being forced to have, like, if you're going to spend money under the TAM rules, you essentially had to spend a top heavy roster. Under these new rules, all the money is going to be, or most of the money is going to be general allocation money. You can spend that money across your entire roster. And so if you want to moneyball it a little bit and have a more evenly spread roster or maybe a deeper roster, you have the flexibility as a team or as a general manager to do those things now.
I think that flexibility is really important. That was one of Chris Bills wrote a really good article today too about that in the Statesman, and he talked about the importance of flexibility, and then the fact that, like you said, because everything was so top heavy for the general player, the way that the money worked out in the CBA was really a lot better for them, because it was super like have and have not in the league before in terms of the guys making a ton of money at the top and then almost none throughout. So that was a good move. And I know they also, the way free agency changed, I mean, free agency was basically almost non-existent before. So talk about that.
Before this previous collective bargaining agreement, it actually was non-existent. So in the last collective bargaining agreement, they added free agency. This was the big thing that the Players Association was pushing for in the last CBA. They actually probably left quite a bit of money on the table in those negotiations, in exchange for getting free agency put into place. In the old CBA, you had to be 28 years old and have 8 years of MLS service in order to qualify for free agency, which is kind of ridiculous. It's pretty limited. There's not a ton of guys. There are people who fall into that category, but not that many. Under the new CBA, that has been lowered to 24 years old and 5 years of service. So there's still some limitations as far as how much a player can earn on a contract gained through free agency. But I think it's a pretty big win for the players regarding player mobility and player power in contract negotiations. So if you're a player whose contract is running down and you're trying to negotiate for a better contract, you have that card in your deck of free agency to pull out to say, okay, if y'all don't want to pay me, I'll go somewhere else for free who will pay me. So I think that's a pretty big win for the players.
And that so fits into the model of all the other leagues that we have here in the States. But it's a thing that everybody's common that knows and understands, and it's been a part of what they do. And so the next thing that's interesting is some flights. I mean, who knew that charter flights were such a thing? But it's apparently it was a big part of it. And it's kind of crazy that before, the teams that wanted, they didn't have any option. Like they couldn't provide the flights for their players in a way that they might want to do. So like, can you cover that?
So under the old CBA, charter flights were limited to 4 flight legs per season. So essentially like 2 trips there and 2 trips back. You can divvy those up however you wanted to, but honestly, most teams weren't even using these. They were using maybe one or two or none of them. And so under this new CBA in 2020, it's going to be set at a minimum of 8 legs. You have not a minimum. It's 8 legs. You have to use them all. There's also rules put in place that for playoff games and then for international games, so CONCACAF Champions League games, like the away games, you have to use a charter flight. So those in playoffs, you have to use charters. Those will increase season on season. Up to 2024, there's going to be 16 mandatory charter flight legs within the season, plus CCL and playoffs and whatever else. So I said this a little bit on the last episode. This may sound kind of like an entitlement thing or a luxury thing from the players, but it really does have a big effect on performance and recovery time. So an example would be if a team plays on the weekend, has a midweek game, then plays on the weekend. Recovery time in those situations is super valuable. And so a delayed flight or limited leg room, those things can be really big factors on how well a team is playing in the game they're on the way to, or how well they're going to play in the next game they have coming up. So if they can take a charter flight, they finish the game, they go get on their charter flight, they can start recovery immediately, essentially. So they're resting, they have leg space. That way, if they have 2 or 3 days rest, they actually have time to recover, as opposed to starting that recovery 6 or 8 hours later after being on a cramped flight for that long.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. is a huge country, too. So, I mean, it's more than anywhere in the world. Like, the flight time is significant, and its effect on players is huge. One thing that also, I believe, I'll just ask you about it. Is there a young designated player rule? Like, what changed in the designated players? And I couldn't quite get that.
None of this is set in stone yet. They essentially have allowed for this option in the CBA, but there's still going to be some negotiations and some choosing going on. But this is maybe one of the negatives that some people are seeing in this new CBA is the third DP slot could potentially, again, this isn't set in stone yet, could potentially be limited to an age, essentially. So your third DP has to be under a certain age. That's maybe not the most encouraging thing if you're looking for MLS just to become a better and more competitive league, because that's maybe not going to do it. But it's probably a sign pointing towards MLS wanting to become a more selling league. And
right.
So investing in younger players, which you can then sell on at a profit later on.
Yeah, kind of get them out of the mold of getting into the most expensive, biggest name, who's typically usually going to be an older player and into something else. But
I think one of the biggest things, and maybe one of the smartest things that the MLS Players Association did in these negotiations, was the potential for media revenue sharing in the future. So MLS's media rights end in 2022. They'll be selling a new media deal, essentially, a new TV deal. So the Players Association have worked in a mechanism to the CBA that would allow them to see some of the profits in the event that MLS lands an extremely lucrative media deal when the current one expires. So if all of a sudden MLS has all of this money from a TV deal, the Players Association have worked it into the CBA that a percentage of that money would have to go towards player spending. So essentially they're saying, okay, MLS, if you're going to get your payday, some of that's going to come to us.
Yeah, that's really good for them. And it's a smart way to do it, to not have to go renegotiate a CBA or whatever, to have to be thinking ahead on that and come up with a way that everybody benefits out of the growth in the league. And they're working together toward the growth in the TV deal.
Yeah, so the biggest takeaways from this for Austin FC, I think free agency is going to be a big deal. With as much money as they're putting into facilities and what it looks like they're going to put into staff and things like that, free agency could be a big deal for Austin FC, because if there's a player whose contract's winding down, maybe he's in one of these teams that's not spending on things like that. Maybe Claudio and Josh can tempt some of these guys over to Austin without paying a transfer fee because of this new expanded free agency.
Yeah, and Bill's talked about how important it is for us to know that right now, because we don't have any pressure as they think about how spend this, you know, next several months,
yeah,
think about how they're going to construct the roster, like knowing these rules and knowing that free agency is going to be part of it is like
exactly
super valuable.
And not only free agency, but everything, like all of the other things going into this CBA, Austin FC will know this far in advance. Nashville and Miami did not get that luxury. They kind of had to wait until the last minute to be able to do any of this stuff. So, yeah, it's a huge luxury for Austin FC to know these things this far in advance so they can kind of be planning and budgeting for these types of things.
Yeah, they're going to be the first club that can go the entire process of roster construction with this sort of information in hand. That'll be great for them. So Nashville,
Before we move on, I want to give another shout out to Chris Bills, who he has an article in the Statesman that just came out in the last couple of days about kind of what this CBA means for Austin FC, and digs a little bit deeper into that. So we'll post that in the show notes. I'll also post some links to Paul Tenorio and Sam Stageschool's articles in The Athletic. And then they also have a new podcast that's in the Total Soccer Show feed called Allocation Disorder, where they're pretty much going to be talking about payment structures and kind of moves that have implications in that in MLS. So if you're kind of a nerd about that kind of thing, it's a really great thing to listen to. So, yeah, we'll definitely post notes for that. Okay, so, yeah, now we can move on to Nashville, Jeremiah.
Perfect. All right, Nashville. We talked about it last time. So I was really excited because I enjoy a good train wreck from a distance. And I enjoy local politics. And so in some ways for the people in Nashville and the league and everyone else, it's exciting if they have a deal signed, that MLS and the mayor came together and made a joint statement and talked about it. You know, in terms of a fan of drama, I'm kind of sad. That they managed to pull this off. But yeah, they had an announcement this week sort of about the future of the stadium construction.
And so the deal essentially ended up being that instead of getting some of the public subsidies that they were going to get, it's going to be entirely privately funded right now,
right?
Correct?
Yeah, the big part of it, it'll end up being ultimately like a lot like our stadium deal. So the part, I think it was $50 million or so that the public was originally going to kick in, now is going to be completely privately funded. So it was, you know, it was difficult, it was tough, but ultimately for the taxpayers of Nashville,
right? Yeah, I think the end result, I don't think anybody can be upset with that end result. I kind of think that's the way it should happen, is that these really rich people should pay for their own businesses. And that, like you said, that's the thing we have here in Austin. They were given some land, but as far as the development and the stadium construction, they're going to build it all and pay for it all. So I think that's a really a great end result. Maybe not the ideal way of getting to that end result, but yeah, in the end, I'm happy for Nashville, just because like we talked about in the last episode, that could have very easily been us in a heartbeat. So yeah, I'm happy for them.
Yeah, it was really good. And so ultimately they, there was Nashville Metro had an obligation to pay up to $35 million toward lease payments and then infrastructure. And so that was an interesting thing. So the club is actually picking up about $19 million in infrastructure costs on the site to prepare it for that. And I think that's a positive overall. Another thing that's going on in Nashville is, so they've got their first match coming up, and we talked about this last time, but originally there was a lot of concern around how many season tickets they'd sold. I think it was like 5,000 at some point, but they keep announcing these giant attendance numbers for the first match, which would be the Titan Stadium. I think they're close to 40,000 now. Which is really exciting for them. But then, their opponent is Atlanta.
Yeah, which Atlanta is just a few hours away, and Atlanta notoriously draws big crowds. So I think a more telling number is going to be, I don't know their schedule, but say they play the Colorado Rapids in their second home game. I'd be more interested to see those numbers as opposed to the first one against Atlanta.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it would be, I think, a really bad look for them if there are more Atlanta United fans and their first match than Nashville.
A potential for that to happen. And yeah, I'll be interested to see that one.
Yeah, I mean, I guess there's a potential for everybody that Nashville plays to do that. Them and then, so Atlanta's other, who's their other rival? I mean, I guess they kind of have a thing with Orlando, right?
I mean, Orlando, it's been Orlando that's kind of been, I think, the league push narrative, but I think fans have kind of taken on to that as well. Like, they see each other as rivals, but I don't know that Orlando's ever beat Atlanta. And so I saw a bunch of stuff on Twitter this last season. Like, is it still a rivalry if one team always wins?
Super one-sided, yeah.
And so, yeah, I've heard people talk about this. Like, if Orlando stays bad forever and now Atlanta has a closer team, maybe they drop that rival and now Nashville's their rival.
And they switch to Nashville.
We'll see.
Yeah, that's an interesting thought. And then, so we've got one other expansion team coming in this year.
Speaking of train wrecks,
yeah, now taking the lead for sort of the biggest disaster is Inter Miami, which, I mean, maybe they'll be Inter Miami long term, or maybe they won't be. Do you want to cover that a little bit?
Yeah, so they've essentially, Inter Milan has filed a trademark claim for use of the term Inter in the U.S. So Internacional, I don't remember the full Internacional Football Club de Miami. I don't remember the order of it all, but they've been marketing themselves as Inter Miami. So Inter Milan is essentially taking them to court over this name. So Inter Miami actually won this first little stint in court. Do you know how important that win is, or does it matter at this point?
No, it's actually, so it's Inter Milan won against.
Milan won the first one. Sorry, I read that wrong.
Yeah, Miami and MLS wanted to have the claim thrown out completely, saying that there's lots of other Inters. You know, I mean, it's not like Real Salt Lake. It's not, you know, they didn't get sued by Real Madrid because of that. And so they claim that there's a lot of other uses of Inters around, both in the U.S. and other countries. And that, which was an important part of the claim, and the trademark court threw that out. So that was kind of half of the argument for MLS and Inter Miami about why it was okay to use that. And so now they've got to resolve the other half, but it's not a super good start for them in terms of that. You know, between that and Planet Lockhart and all the other things, they're kind of a mess, but they did get a giant pile of money just today of questionable origin. So I think we should probably talk about that too.
Yeah, so it's essentially Qatar. Like, who is actually the sponsor, right?
So I couldn't even figure that out. I read this article from the Daily Mail, and it talked about David Beckham getting, I think it's 180 million pounds, and I'm not up on the daily conversion rate on what that is, but a bunch. Yeah. Truckloads of money, and it's from Qatar, and it's like not the government, but it's their foundation. I believe that they did that with Barcelona for a couple years, where they had the philanthropic arm, but it's basically the royal family, you know, of Qatar.
Yeah. So how would you feel about this kind of thing if you were an Inter Miami fan, Jeremiah?
I feel like it's literally blood money. I mean, they've got this awful human rights record. You know, I believe it's still illegal to be gay in the country. You know, we've gone through the 2020 World Cup, like construction and, you know, the imported labor and all that.
Essentially using slave labor to build the stadiums for the World Cup.
Right. And I mean, I wish that I had the courage to, like, promise you now that I'm not going to watch the 2022 World Cup, you know, out of that. But I'm not sure that I do. But it's going to be really tough. I mean, I'm super happy. I was texting with Chris Quinn, who sells sponsorships for Austin FC, this morning to see kind of like how that works out as far as, you know, does the team keep all the money? Because it's a single entity thing, right? So does the team keep the sponsorship money, or does it go back to the league or whatever? The team basically gets to keep all the funds. And so one of the things I said was like, I mean, at least Yeti has not created any human rights abuses. So I feel a lot better about where we are. But yeah, I mean, it's a real challenge. And I would expect, I know that the Independent Supporters Council, just on rumors of it being announced, and kind of made a statement out against it. So I'd expect the sort of the fandom of the league as a whole to really sort of take a statement. It's like, this is not the kind of, not the kind of thing we want to be associated with. So I'm happy with where we are and who we've got, and it's not a thing that we have to choose to make a decision about supporting or not.
All right, so let's move on to some Austin FC news. So one of the biggest Austin FC bits of news in the recent weeks is they have some new hires in the front office. So do you want to tell us who those people were and a little bit about them, Jeremiah?
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that. And we'll probably spend a little more time on some of the ones we know and have experience with. And they're honestly probably more relevant to the soccer community than others. So I think the first one that we're really excited about and who runs a great program is Caitlin Swartz, who has run Upper 90 and has been very involved in the movement overall.
Yeah, you've heard us talk about Upper 90 on the show several times. And we were already thinking we should have Caitlin on at some point. And now that she works for the club, we're like, oh, yeah, we're definitely going to have her on. Like, we were already going to do it anyway. And so let's for sure do it now.
Yeah, when I texted her about it, I was like, I promise this is not just because you got the job. Like, I really wanted to have you on. And at the time, it hasn't, you know, hasn't worked. But please come talk to us. So she will definitely be one of them. So she's going to be their vice president of community engagement. And then they're going to take over. She'll run the 4ATX Foundation, and that foundation will take over the Upper 90 programming. So it's a great opportunity for that program to grow.
It seems like a no-brainer to me. Like, she was already doing community engagement in a big way, including soccer and youth development. Not just soccer development, just, like, people development, essentially. And so I think it's a no-brainer and such a great hire for Austin FC to bring Caitlin on. All these other names we're going to talk about, they all look good on paper, but we've already seen what Caitlin can do in this city. So I think that's a no-brainer and a really great hire from Austin FC.
Yeah, she's going to be really good. And the next one that we know a little bit about, and I'm going to apologize because I hate saying somebody's name without knowing how to pronounce it, but I'm going to do it now, is Alfredo Naim?
I'm guessing, yeah.
Okay, Naim, who is... actually been in the media, worked with MS Austin Radio, which is the biggest radio group here in town, which has been renamed. I believe had Jorge and some other folks on.
Yeah, they've had Anthem. Jorge and Gabby were on some of their radio programs leading up. Alfredo also did some work with the Murga, and they brought us out to Blues on the Green, which they were running the marketing stuff for.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that. That was really cool.
So we got to meet Alfredo going out to that. So it was really cool again to see another name that had been involved with Austin Anthem before there was any connection to Austin FC. So that was an encouraging hire as well.
Yeah, and Alfredo is the community marketing manager. And I would love to have, I think we talked about this last time, I'd love to have an org chart because it's hard to figure out who's a VP of what and manager of what. But, you know, as Tom Webb told me in an exchange, Alfredo and Caitlin are both really good people. So we're just happy to have more good people on board.
Yeah, some of the other ones are going to be a little less visible to the greater public. So Eric Hagan was hired as legal counsel. Ryan Fannin is a sports technology expert who was most recently with the Indianapolis Colts. And so that's a pretty big deal as well.
Yeah, I thought the stadium experience would probably be super helpful to us there because I know it had a lot to do with sort of the tech inside the stadium. If you think about being able to take care of a 80,000 seat indoor stadium in Indianapolis, that there's probably a lot that we can learn for Austin here. And then the last one is Keith Winton, who's going to be the vice president of finance. I know he's English, and I know a coworker of mine used to work for him, and that's basically all I know about him, but I'm sure he'll be great.
Yeah, like we said, Caitlin and Alfredo are the ones that are probably going to be the most visible to fans, and we just wanted to point out that We fully endorse these hires,
which I'm sure means a lot to them. You know, I don't love talking about finances here, but there was a really interesting story.
Was an interesting finance thing. I think I find money kind of boring a little bit, but this was kind of a pretty interesting story that came out. So this is in the Austin Business Journal story, essentially talking to Anthony Precourt and Andy Lockney about the finances coming into the club right now and comparing those to the finances they had available in Columbus. So one of the first things that they mentioned was, of course, the deposits. So they collected over 40,000 deposits at anywhere from $50 to $2,000 a pop for those deposits, which is already a big thing. But what are some of the other factors that they mentioned as far as financials, Jeremiah?
Yeah, I want to hit the one, sort of the most interesting quote, which I think some people put on Twitter about this all, that really gives a perspective on where we are now and where they were in Columbus. Is basically the St. David's healthcare deal, which is for the training facility and being the official healthcare partner, but like, it's not the jersey, it's not the stadium, delivers more contractually obligated income than Columbus got on the stadium, the training facility, the jersey, and the suite combined. I mean, that shows a pretty good comparison between the types of money that they're going to be able to raise here and there.
Yeah, so with this one thing is put in place already. This is with before the jersey deal, which we'll talk about here in a second, before stadium being named, which is going to happen later this year, probably. Anthony Precourt already has access to more money than he did in his days in Columbus, which is kind of a telling thing. And I think maybe probably a little bit vindicating for him.
Oh, for sure. I'm sure he feels good about that. And it's good that we have bigger numbers to compare, but it's really, when you think about the opportunity to pour that money back into the club, back into the front office, back into the players, like, that's what really matters.
Yeah, comparison aside, it's good for the club. I mean, the more people who have interest in putting money into this project, the better players we can buy, the more we can put into our facilities, the better staff we can hire. All of that just means better soccer and a better experience here at Austin.
Yeah, and then ticket-wise, because we keep, I think like on the Reddit group, like ticket discussion is the most important thing. So there was some interesting stuff in there. So all 27 suites are leased. The loge boxes are also all spoken for. And then the premium field-level seats, which they had about 400 of, they're all gone. So basically, like, they're converting that demand. I know there was a lot of questions about, like, oh, they got all these deposits, you know, but, you know, was it easy to do, and are they really going to convert and whatever? So far it seems like the demand is like turning into actual seats.
They're selling it out, and these are the most expensive seats. So the seats are only getting cheaper from here, which you would think means that they're going to sell those out too.
Yeah, for sure. And then another thing that was a little bit interesting was that they had a stadium naming rights offer that would have got them $3.5 million a year, which would have been in the league's top 10, and they actually turned that down.
Right, which the $35 million for the 10 years, from, if you look across the league, that's not, it's not an amazing offer, but it's not a bad offer. But what it tells you is that the Austin FC is very confident they can get more than that and actually be like a pretty competitive in the league, maybe top handful of teams as far as these sponsorship deals go.
Yeah, and that is really telling for them. And another part of that article said that they were on the verge of completing a $4 million a year deal for a jersey sponsor.
Upwards of $4 million.
Upwards of $4 million.
$4 million was a guess. They don't really know. But
upwards of $4 million for a jersey sponsor. And then since then, we've less than a week ago, or about a week since the time it came out, we know who the jersey sponsor is.
Yeah, so we've got Yeti as our first jersey sponsor. What is your reaction to that?
I think it's great. It's like an Austin company with a national brand. Obviously, getting a lot of money is good.
Are you a Yeti guy? Would you like? Are you a Yeti fan?
I mean, I'm not like Yeti life all the way around, but yeah, I like their stuff.
Like, yeah, I know people, and people within Anthem and just in general, there's a lot of people who are like pretty brand loyal to Yeti. I'm not one of those people. I have like three Stanley thermos type things at my house, so I guess I'm a Stanley man. But that aside, Yeti is just, it's a cool brand, like a well-regarded brand. And then more importantly for me, I really wanted I just wanted the logo to look cool on the shirt. And so
you got that. There's nothing that's like in the way of
it's
the
gonna
design.
Be very simple, four letters. They usually put it in like gray or white or black anyway, and so I don't think they'll have a problem color matching and just making it white or black or whatever's going to look best on the shirt. It really bugs me when, like, you've got, so we were talking about this in a Slack chat the other day about Atlanta United. They have like family insurance, something or other, on their shirts, which is not, it's not a cool logo. It's not a cool sounding thing. But the fact that they color match it and put it in gold on the shirts makes it look 100 times better than if it was just like in white or in whatever normal color they use for their logo. So I think color matching is really important, but also just something just kind of standard, or just like, it's four letters, very blocky letters. You can't really mess it up. It's going to look nice on a shirt.
Yeah, and the example I always think of that's like the opposite of that is like the Chevrolet, the gigantic obnoxious Chevrolet logo in front of the Manchester
big
United.
Big gold Chevy logo. Or like I think Getafe and a few other Spanish teams used to have Burger King as their logo. So it'd be like a blue shirt with a big Burger King logo on the middle of their shirts.
Yeah, that was really bad. So, and I'm actually drinking my Flavor Country out of Austin FC Yeti cup, because when we went on Monday and you were not there, right? You didn't have a chance to go. That was like, that is the best swag bag that I've ever gotten from an event. So we got a Yeti, we get scarf, cap, shirt, mug, all the Yeti things, which are really good.
Yeah. So back to the money involved in this deal. So we don't have, they didn't release the financial details of this, but a source told the person who wrote this Business Journal article that it would put Austin FC's jersey sponsorship among the most lucrative in MLS, which would place it above $4 million. So I think some of the better ones are like $4 million and up, and this source was saying that it's going to be in that range. So probably somewhere between $4-6 million a year on that sturdy on that jersey sponsor deal. So that's not nothing.
Yeah, it's just another. It's another opportunity for income. And one other thing I loved about the event was McConaughey was there, and he was super interactive. And so, you know, he came up and met with everybody. Like, he kind of leaned into the Anthem group before, and he led the chants. And, like, the guy is really involved. And just every time. I'm so happy and surprised by it.
It's, I watched the live feed and then saw a bunch of pictures and stuff afterwards. But you can tell he's getting really into this, and he's not just going to show up and wave. He wants to be involved in this culture and be like, help build it and help be a part of it and help promote it. Anytime he's been on any TV show or doing, he's been promoting a new movie lately, he wears that Austin FC shirt a lot. And so he's getting really into it, which is really encouraging.
Yeah, and then it's extended back out because he's got this thing with Will Ferrell, right? And so Will Ferrell was recently interviewed for a movie, and even he was like talking trash about Austin and Austin FC. So it's both of them. Anytime both of them talk about it. The other thing that we got out of that deal Monday was there was a 30% off discount in store that day, which I have all the Yeti things I need, but it was funny. Like, I started getting orders. There are people like watching the live stream. They started texting me. They're like, hey, buy me this and this and this. And like, I'm not your errand boy, so I did not make those. But it was really fun. And it was really, I think the thing I liked about it is I feel like it's a little bit different from the standard like corporate MLS, you know, announcement. There was a lot of life. There's a lot of vibrancy. There was like a lot of local flair. And we talked about that when we talked a couple shows ago about the ownership announcement. You know, it seems like people are really having fun, and there's like real joy and excitement around this team, which just makes it even better.
So let's go on to that interview with Natalie Simsky. She's going to talk to us about women's engagement in Anthem and kind of her path to this leadership role. So we're going to go to that now. We'll be back with some Austin Anthem news right after that.
I'm happy to be joined by Dr. Natalie Simsky, the Women's Outreach Director for Austin Anthem. So can you talk a little bit about what that role is and why we're here today, too?
Yeah, so I'm the Director of Women's Engagement, which means I'm basically making sure that we are keeping in mind the interest of women and our female supporters in general with our events and our approach, and basically just making sure that keeping inclusivity in mind, that women are part of the equation in how we are, moving forward with Austin Anthem in general.
So we're here at Painting with a Twist.
We are.
So you hear some background, beer drinking and painting, and we're going to make a grackle today. How did that come about?
Yeah. So one of the things that I'm really passionate about with women's engagement is making sure that women who want to support Austin FC but maybe haven't supported soccer previously have a way to get involved. So if you are on board with supporting Austin FC and maybe you haven't been a soccer fan historically, it may be kind of intimidating to come out to an event that is soccer centric. Like, we're going to watch and root for Team X as an event. However, you can support a team without necessarily knowing a ton about the sport yet, right? Or at all, maybe. There is pomp and circumstance surrounding supporting a team. And our event today, we're going to be painting a grackle in a live oak tree to pay homage to, if you will, Anthem's grackle mascot and the live oak mascot of Austin FC. So kind of, just supporting in a different way today. It's an easy access access point for people who maybe don't know a ton about soccer or want to do a different type of event than showing up at a brewery. So this is just kind of a different event that we're doing, and occasionally we'll do events like this that are not as soccer centric and not as brewery centric, to kind of give people different access points to get into Anthem and to get into supporting Austin FC.
So give me a little bit about your background. So how did you find Austin Anthem, and then once you did, what made you want to get involved and take on a leadership role?
I got involved with Anthem actually because I saw Ryan Riggins at church in all Austin FC gear, like maybe two or three days after they announced the Austin FC logo, and we didn't even have a team yet officially. I had followed the MLS and Austin group just kind of casually, and I knew what was happening with that, but also never didn't pay too much attention until the scuttlebutt started coming out of Columbus. And I started paying a little bit more attention then. But when Ryan showed up at church and I saw him in all Austin FC gear, I was like, how do you already have all of this? They announced it like 48 hours ago. And he goes, oh, I was at the party where they announced it. And I was like, how'd you do that? And he told me that he was a part of this group, and that it was being rebranded as Austin Anthem now that we had a team, and that they were going to have a volunteer meetup. And I was like, sign me up. Like, let's go. And I showed up at the volunteer meeting and apparently ranted a little bit about how it might be more difficult sometimes historically for females to get involved in supporter groups and in fan culture in general. And all of a sudden, they were asking me to lead the women's engagement portion of Anthem, and here I am.
So be careful what you wish for. But also, like, I mean, I don't want you to rant again, but no. I mean, share a little bit of that perspective about why it's important and soccer culture and, you know, just what why women's outreach is such a big thing to us and why we care.
Well, I think that the thing that I've... The short version of what I frequently talk about with supporter culture and soccer specifically is there has been, of course, y'all have probably talked about gatekeeper culture a little bit with soccer and the idea that it used to be difficult to find soccer to watch in the U.S. And as such, it was kind of this small little cult of people for a while, if you will, that would gather early in the mornings and in obscure places to watch EPL or to watch, you know, the Italian League or whatever. And as such, it was these small pockets of people and small groups. And then to break into that group, you kind of had to prove your fandom or you were asked to kind of... assert your criterion or your credentials for joining aforementioned group. And so I remember the first time I went to an Arsenal watch party without my boyfriend at the time, and someone was like, "Why are you here?" And I had to like, I remember someone asking me like, "Can you even name three starters?" And here's the thing, I could have named three starters, but I also shouldn't have to.
Right.
Because who cares why I'm there or if I know three starters? Like, I should be allowed to watch this game for whatever reason, right? And that's really where I'm coming from is I don't care if you know three starters. I don't care if you know what offsides is. If you're here to support this team, you're on my team. Let's go. Let's roll. And that's kind of my approach to women's engagement specifically and this supporters group is just the come one, come all mentality.
I appreciate that. So I'm guessing so you're not going to be a huge fan of like the women's clinic with the everything in pink and like let's talk about how good looking all the boys on the team approach.
No, I mean, listen, here's the thing. If that works for you, I'm here for it. But that's not the only way for women to be involved in supporting this team. It doesn't have to be about pink. It doesn't have to be about, you know, cheerleading necessarily. There are a million different ways for you to support this team, and I'm on board with every one of them, right? So this is one way to support the team, right? Joining with other people who are going to be fans of this club, be it about the city or the mascot or the sport or whatever it is that's bringing you to support this team. Like, sure, let's paint a grackle in a live oak and let's do it.
Yeah, that's really cool. So did you play growing up?
I did play growing up. Yeah. I
played. To what level?
I played club all the way through high school, and I played for all 4 years varsity in high school.
Nice.
And we won state 5A back when there was only 5A and no 6A, because I'm old now. And I played, I did play for the state Olympic development team.
Oh, wow.
Back, but that was when I was still like, U15 probably, and so I went and did the whole Olympic development program thing for a while.
That's so good. So I played until I was 8, so I've got a lot of experience.
Yes, you're very, very skilled.
Very, very skilled. And then, so I grew up in this really small town with like 200 people, and when I was 15, they're like, "Oh, well, you played when you were 6, 7, and 8, so you're the most experienced soccer player in this town." So we need you to coach like the little kids team.
Oh my gosh, I love
I'm
it.
I'm glad to be around people who know a lot more and have had a lot more experience in soccer than I have. So before I let you go, Paint, can you talk to us a little bit about what we have in store for 2020 and the women's engagement?
Absolutely.
And kind of where you want to go? And you know, we're a year out.
Yep, we're a year out. And probably the biggest thing that we're going to have coming down the pike for the women's engagement side is we're going to do some more women's watch parties, if you will. And if you weren't part of our Women's World Cup watch parties, they are women-owned events. We invite absolutely everyone to come watch with us. So what we mean by a women-owned event is the women of Austin Anthem are largely in charge of hosting and putting on the party, but we are hosting the party for everyone to come and hang out at. So again, we're not exclusively for women. We want everybody there. And our watch parties for the Women's World Cup were a serious party.
They were amazing. Wait, I want to break in and ask you, because I remember the very first watch party we went to, and you're like, oh, if we have, I think you told me, it's like, if we have like five full tables of people, this would be amazing. And then what happened that day?
I think we had 300, and I was shocked. Honestly, I didn't know what to expect. And I remember telling Christine, our director of LGBTQIA, I told her, I said, if we've got 12 people who make it out on a Monday for this party, like, I'll be hyped for it. And then we had, again, like 200 people on a Monday morning or whatever. It was wild. So we don't have specific locations yet because we don't have times yet, obviously. We're way ahead of the Olympics. The Summer Olympics is what we're going to be watching, by the way. The women's team will be in the Summer Olympics, and we will watch those games for sure. And so keep an eye out for those. That'll kind of be probably our biggest event leading up to 2021 that's a women-owned or event, basically.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining us today.
Yeah. Thanks for coming, guys.
Appreciate it.
All right. We want to thank Natalie for joining us again. Natalie is wonderful, and I'm so happy that we were able to get her on the show.
Gosh, she's good. And I forgot that we just kind of randomly found her through Riggins. So Riggins is the thing which all goodness comes through.
Yeah. So the moral of the story is wear your gear everywhere because you might recruit our next leadership member.
I love that.
Okay. So let's move on to some Austin Anthem news and updates. So once again, as always, we want to plug Zanate Musical Collective. So we were out at Hop Squad Brewing the other night for our latest instrumental practice. Thanks to Hop Squad for opening up their doors. They were a lot of fun, and the space was great. So going forward, I kind of want to just differentiate these two things. So we're going to have instrumental practices and then what we're calling song and chant socials. So song and chant socials is kind of like a concert. We're just going to play through the songs we already know, maybe teach new people a few things, and just kind of hang out, sing, play music, and just kind of have a big party together. The instrumental practices are going to be more focused on learning new songs, and so anyone is welcome to come to either of them. Even if you're not playing an instrument, come hang out at the instrumental practice. I think you can learn something, and if nothing else, have a beer with another grackle. So, but that's just going to kind of be the differentiation between those two things. So the next song and chant social that we have scheduled is going to be March 31st at Tacoba. We'll be putting out some more details about that going forward. But Tacoba, we just confirmed this the other day. They're going to be nice enough to open up their space for us. So the last couple of these that we've done have been a lot of fun, and we've had a really good turnout at them. So come hang out. Even if you don't know how to sing, you don't know how to play an instrument, come hang out. It's been really, really fun.
And just the energy from it, whether you're any good at it or, you know, or any of it at all, just being there and being a part of that environment and getting the chance to sing and chant, whatever. It's just like it's super inspiring.
Yeah. So what else do we have going on, Jeremiah?
So the next event that we have coming up is the league starts play again, the last season of that Austin FC being in MLS. So on February 29th, we're going to do an opening day party at Oscar Blues from 2 to 7. We'll have a bunch of matches on. There'll be a watch party. What did Tony write here as we find out how FC Dallas plans to not win anything, or Houston Dynamo will continue to exist as the model completely average soccer franchise?
So yeah, those are going to be the two games that fall into that window. I think we'll catch parts of other ones, but mostly we're going to watch FC Dallas and Houston Dynamo, and some of us may or may not be rooting against those teams.
against both. And then Wonder Pig will be open, which is a food truck there, which should be super good. Always nice to be able to try out other stuff. Importantly, because our bar brewery events aren't always this way, but kids are welcome. It's an afternoon thing, so like bring the family out. My kids will be there. They'll probably be playing Minecraft and not watching soccer, but that'll be fine.
It's also space for dogs out on the patio.
Yeah, absolutely. Space for the dogs on the patio. So it'll just be a big, open, fun event. And there will be, I don't know, special guests and prizes, maybe or maybe not. But yeah, look forward to it. It'll be cool.
It's going to be fun. Yeah. What else, Jeremiah?
Then the next thing. Okay, so South by Southwest, because
this is not an official South by Southwest event.
So there's a random festival that comes in March of every year.
And we just happen to be doing an event during that week.
We're throwing a party. during that week. And any of you that came to the party that randomly happened at the same point in time last year.
That was also not a South by Southwest.
It was not an official event. we'll remember, it was super cool and fun. And so we're going to go to Empire Control Room. So last year we were on the first Saturday. This year we'll be on the first Sunday. We'll be on East 6th Street near the action, near the convention center, near the Interactive Festival. We're going to start at around 8:30 and end around 3.
That's 8:30 a.m. Because we're doing, mind you, Premier League watch parties. So we're going to be watching some early soccer.
Yes, which we should all do. So, you know, Natalie talked about people, you know, groups of people getting together and watching soccer in the morning and that being the motivation. So this is your chance. If you want to get together and drink beer and watch soccer early.
And we had a good turn. I was really surprised. Like, I think we opened the gates at 8 or 8:30 last year. And within the first hour, there were 50 or 60 people in there. A random crew of West Ham fans showed up wearing jerseys and stuff at like 8 a.m. I was like, where did you come from even?
Yeah, I don't know if they found it. And we had a bachelorette party come through at one point, sometime in the early afternoon, too, which was wild.
Hundreds of people passed through just in the first couple of hours and probably in the thousands throughout the whole day. So it was a big, crazy event last year. So, yeah, definitely swing by that, too.
So we're going to do that. So we're going to have soccer matches in the morning. I kind of went through the schedule. Highlights are Tottenham United at 11:30. Basically, all of La Liga plays around. I think there's a lot of those matches are at 11. And then for MLS, the Revs and the Timbers play at 12:30. And we'll also have a FIFA tournament. And they're also having a big crawfish boil there on site, too. So if you're into crawfish boils, this is your chance to get it. And again, unlike last year at the Rustic Tap, where I had to throw a certain council member and her children out before they could even get in, this is a family-friendly event, so you can bring the kids.
Yes. All right. So we'll have more details on these events and other events throughout the rest of the spring and the rest of the year. I just want to remind you, go buy your 2020 membership, get your flag, get your grackle pin. Go onto the website, check out our other Anthem merch. Ryan Riggins and the rest of the merch team have been making some really awesome stuff, so get on there and check that out. Get involved in the discussion on the Grackle's Nest Facebook group and then also the Austin FC subreddit. Then, as always, remember to leave us a review, subscribe to the show, and rate us on your favorite podcasting app. That will go a long way in helping other people find us in this coming year leading up to Austin FC's first season. So we will be back with more Austin FC news, Austin Anthem updates, and guests in the next couple of weeks. Until then, enjoy your soccer.